Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody. I'm Marissa and I'll be taking you through until 5 o'clock this evening. UN visit prompts scrutiny of Australia's shameful detention and prison regime. First up on the show, we'll bring you an interview with Maggie Mon, who is a proud Gundjari advocate from southwest Queensland and joins the Human Rights Law Centre as director of the First Nations Justice Team in May 2024. We will talk to them about the visit to Australia of the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention from the 1st to the 12th of December, and the visit coincides with governments across the country pursuing tough-on-crime reform to bail and youth justice laws that experts warn will disproportionately impact First Nations people, including children. We will discuss the Albanese government's attempts to re-detain migrants and refugees previously held in arbitrary immigration detention, the banning of mobile phones in immigration detention, and the expansion of Australia's offshore warehousing regime. After that, we will speak with Brett Collins about the Youth Justice Senate inquiry. We will also talk about First Nations man Cameron Welsh. Justice Action issued a media release about him and are following him through. The guards have beaten him up in prison and are trying to destroy him. His family has asked Justice Action to help. Finally, we will speak with David Glance from the Refugee Action Collective, who will give an update on what's happening with upcoming events of the Refugee Action Collective. We will also continue our discussion from last week, where we interviewed Thomas Fing, and we will talk about what's happening with the Australia First rallies and some of the background associated with the Nazis and what anti-racist groups are doing. It's approximately 4:04, and I'm hoping to cross over to Maggie soon.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
They're eyeing off an estate which is in perfectly good condition. It just happens to have bay views and a lot of open space.
Bay Views for All is a new documentary that reveals the human cost of the Victorian government's public housing redevelopment project. The film documents residents of the Barrack Beacon public housing estate as they fight to save their homes and community. Bayviews for All is available for community members, public housing advocates, and organizations to screen, intending to spark conversations, raise funds, and educate audiences on the importance of public housing. To organize a screening, email barrackbeacon@gmail.com. That's BARAKBEACON @gmail.com.
Save public housing! Stop the demolition!
A 3CR supporter.
And you're listening to the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. We can't seem to locate Maggie. It is winding down to the end of the year. Anything can happen at this time. But in the meantime, while we are waiting for Maggie, and indeed, if they don't come on, we'll just move on to Brett Collins at 4:15, I would like to actually inform listeners and read out the media release that this interview was based upon, because it is terribly important that listeners have an idea of what's going on. Human Rights Law Centre for immediate release, Monday the 1st of December 2025. UN visit prompts scrutiny of Australia's shameful detention and prison regime. The Human Rights Law Centre welcomes the visit to Australia of the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention of the 1st to the 12th of December. The visit comes at a critical juncture as governments across the country pursue tough-on-crime reform to bail and youth justice laws that experts warn will disproportionately impact First Nations people, including children. Most recently, the Allen government in Victoria introduced the Adult Time for Violent Crime Bill, which will mean that children as young as 14 could be locked away for life and will remove the principle that prison for children is the last resort. The visit also coincides with the Albanese government's attempts to re-detain migrants and refugees previously held in arbitrary immigration detention, the banning of mobile phones in immigration detention, and the expansion of Australia's offshore warehousing regime. Almost 100 people are trapped in Nauru under offshore processing arrangements, and 37 people have been abandoned in Papua New Guinea. Under a new secret offshore deportation deal, at least 5 refugees living in the Australian community have been permanently exiled to Nauru, with hundreds of further deportations threatened by the Albanese government. Uncertainty also remains for the 800 people previously subjected to Australia's offshore processing regime who have now built homes in Australia but remain in limbo on temporary visas. The working group will meet with representatives of government, civil society, and people who have experienced detention or incarceration to assess Australia's compliance with human rights standards in its treatment of people in custody, and to document cases of arbitrary detention. The working group will deliver its preliminary findings at the end of its visit on 12 December 2025 and will present a full report to the UN Human Rights Council in September 2026. This visit to Australia provides a crucial opportunity for governments across the country to be held accountable for laws and policies that harm people and communities. Quotes attributable to Maggie Munn, Director of First Nations Justice at the Human Rights Law Centre. The working group's visit to Australia comes at a critical time, with governments across this country funneling children and adults into prisons and places of detention in unjust and unbearable conditions. First Nations children belong in playgrounds and with their families and communities. Instead, we see them pipelined into the criminal legal system as young as 10 years old and subject to inhumane conditions like prolonged solitary confinement, strip searching and spit hoods. The working group's visit is an opportunity to hold governments accountable to international human rights standards and ensure that all children are safe and thriving. And that's the end of Maggie's quote. Now I'm going to read you out some quotes that are applicable to Laura John, who's also been on this show. Laura is the Associate Legal Director, Migration Justice at the Human Rights Law Centre. Or should I say injustice? Australia is in the midst of an incarceration crisis, fuelled by unfair laws and policies that deprive marginalised people of their liberty. Migrants and refugees are facing extended periods in immigration detention and are increasingly criminalised through punitive surveillance measures that extend detention into the community. Just last week, the Albanese government banned mobile phones in immigration detention, cutting off the last lifeline for people subjected to arbitrary detention. It is critical that the working group uses this opportunity to hold our government accountable for its systemic and arbitrary deprivation of people's liberty onshore and offshore. So I've just read out that article just so that listeners can actually get a little bit of an awareness about what I was going to do the interview on. And hopefully we will be able to perhaps catch up with Maggie next week, which will be my last show before the summer break, or we can speak to them next year. But also, this article is excellent for people that don't have internet, or even for the listenership in prisons that are really probably deprived of quite a lot of information being in there. It's approximately 11 minutes past four, and we're going to be speaking presently to Brett Collins from Justice Action at 4:15, and hopefully we'll be able to locate Maggie soon. But in the meantime, we will have some announcements.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Want stories straight from community, culture, language, music and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows, and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet, or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our way.
A 3CR supporter.
Kafirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kafir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kafirs.org.au. That's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Come on down to Geelong in January 2026 for the Having a Say conference. It's the most fun you'll ever have all year.
It's a call to arms and the ability to mix it up with ministers in our sector and our voices to be heard.
But we also have come and try activities, a talent show, a dinner disco, and it's a lot of fun. So get online www.valid.org.au and register your interest.
A 3CR supporter.
And you're back with the Doin' Time show, and this is 3CR. And we're going to be speaking presently with Brett Collins from Justice Action, who's going to give us an update on what's happening with the Senate inquiry of youth justice. And we're also going to be speaking about First Nations man Cameron Welch, who's suffered some horrific atrocities. Hello, Brett. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon. Good day, Marissa. Pleased to speak with you again.
It's lovely to have you.
Yes, excellent. Okay, well, there's some amazing things that are happening. This, if nothing else, the focus on some of the issues that have been making people angry for a long period.
Can you just get closer to the phone, Brett?
Okay, yeah, just changed.
That's all right.
Second. There we are. I think that's better.
That's better. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, the inquiry into youth justice is really a great opportunity to highlight some of the stuff that's happening right around Australia and of course in Victoria. Now, there's an amazing situation where they're spending so much money and being so destructive, and all the First Nations kids are being scooped up and getting long sentences. It's horrible.
It is. It's just there's just so much going on there about that. These adult prisons that they're hoping to put children into as well.
Well, that's right.
I mean, prison's no longer a last resort in Victoria now.
Yes. Well, and all those things are just, you'd expect something better from the Labor government, to be quite honest. I mean, it's the sort of stuff where we had expected First Nations support coming out of the ALP. All the other things they're doing, which do favour First Nations, and obviously the treaty, and also the voice and things like that. So they were ALP initiatives, but then to have what they're doing now with sentencing for kids is just amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So tell us about what's happening with. Can you give us an update about what Justice Action is doing with the Senate inquiry?
Well, yes, for sure. Look, what we've done first of all. There's a requirement to get the submission in by the 19th of December, so it's not that far away. So the first thing we did was to go back to the Senate inquiry and say, it's absolutely essential that the children who are in those detention centres are aware that there's an inquiry, and their voices and their views have to be taken into account. So what we said is, in the 19 institutions across Australia, 945 children are held there, and that they should, on their notice boards, have access to the declaration for the inquiry and know what the terms of reference are, and to have at least their leaders. Now, they've got leaders on each of these institutions, that those leaders have a chance to speak and have a chance to have their views and have the views of the other children in there. Because the frustration that we are seeing in Western Australia, where you've got some of these children climbing on the roof and rioting, that frustration should be expressed in words. They should be given a chance to say what they are feeling and how they feel that to be locked away from their families in the way they are is a racist and undemocratic, outrageous behaviour to vulnerable children. It just isn't good
outrageous
enough.
Outrageous, isn't it, Brett? So can you describe the Senate inquiry? What does it actually mean in practice? And what's the contribution that Justice Action will make to that?
Okay, we've only got today. It's only 11 days, a week and a half away. So it's not a long time. What we're doing effectively, we're coming in behind the work we did earlier this year. So in February this year, we presented to the to another Senate inquiry for the earlier Parliament before the election, and we were actually able to present then this amazing contradiction that they are spending an incredible amount of money. Every kid in detention is costing over $1 million a child to lock them in a cell. Every year, $1 million a child, and yet they don't have the basic services that will make a difference. So that is really stark. And when we actually say, for example, New South Wales, we said very carefully to the minister in budget estimates, we said, how is it you don't have any services? He said, well, it's actually, it would cost too much money. And yet we know how much money it would cost. It costs, just for every one of the six institutions in New South Wales, would cost only $1 million. $1 million to set the system up. And they're spending that money on every child every year. So what they're resisting, actually giving the children the services that they need, like restorative justice services, access to education, access to music and to art and to all the things that they do enjoy themselves, and learning new skills and staying close to their culture and keeping in contact with their families and learning new things. All those things are not available to them. They're left in a cell, 14 hours a day, left in a cell, and then put out into the yard with another lot of naughty boys. Like, I was one of them. At their age, I was in a youth justice institution.
Yeah, you've got lots of experience, exactly, haven't you, Brett?
Yes, absolutely. No, I've got a bit of form. I've got some form, that's all right.
Well, that's why you bring so much to your work and to Justice Action, because that's what really, really, really advocate here on this show. It's lived experience. It's a safe environment where people can come onto the show and discuss.
Well, yes, I think it's essential we get voices, like not just voices like myself, and I've been around a long time, but we encourage let our children speak, let the Aboriginal women who are increasingly imprisoned, who are sitting in their cells now and listening now, let them speak, let them have a voice and have a chance for their leaders to bring their voices out and show their humanity. That's what we're looking for, and so if my voice is the early introduces them, then so be it. That's my job.
Absolutely. Now, is there a submission that listeners can find on the Justice Action website, Brett?
Look, it's not actually directed that way. So I'm just thinking now that we might actually make it a little bit easier for people to do that, actually.
Sure.
At the moment, you'd have to actually write a submission into the inquiry itself. And in fact, let me just get a document now for the Senate inquiry, and I'll just get that Senate inquiry document if we can.
Sure.
And here it is. Yep. And the address to which it would go would be it's called legcon.sen, so it's short for Legislative Legislative Council, I think, Legislative Committee. Anyway, it's legcon.sen, that's for Senate, at aph.gov.au.
Sure.
So anyone who can send a submission to that, that'd be really useful. Or else there's a PO box here as well. There's a PO box 6100 at Parliament House, Canberra, ACT 2600.
And has Justice Action written a submission?
No, we're in the process of writing it. It has to be in by the 19th
of December.
Oh, you're in the
process.
Okay. Yes. What we're doing is we're focusing particularly on the ACT at the moment, because we think that the ACT prison, which only has 27 prisoners in it, 27 kids, that if they can't provide service to those 27 kids, that is an outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did, we actually have been confronting the inspectors who went through there only a short time ago. And they said that the ACT government had not been responsive to them when they called for computers in their cells, that they had been ignored, and therefore they didn't pursue it. We went, come on, you're the inspectors, how could you? And so we're chasing them through, because we think if there's nothing else, at least the isolation of imprisonment is lessened when you have computers in your cells, and you can then can talk to the people who are important to you, can learn new skills, and it breaks down the isolation of imprisonment. That's what it's about. So if we can get computers into every cell in detention across Australia and into youth justice institutions, just as they have in New South Wales, if we can get that, then that would make a big difference and make people's lives more productive and make the time that people are spending in their cells not a time of misery and separation, but one in which you can actually can talk to your family, you can learn new skills, you can use your time for education, you can even learn to play music and do art.
Yeah.
Now, they're the sort of things that could easily be done.
Perfect. And that's really important, that Justice Action has always looked at computers in cells, counselling, you know, doing all that stuff. And I'm sure there are many, many organisations that will be contributing their submissions to the Youth Senate Inquiry. And watch this space. We'll have to do some more interviews on that with everybody, a lot of organisations. Brett, let's move on to Cameron Welsh, First Nations man. I believe that Justice Action has written a media release. Can you tell us what's going on? I believe the family has asked Justice Action to help. Is that right?
Well, that's right. Look, what happened was that back in February of this year, several prison officers were giving Cameron a hard time. He's a 26-year-old Aboriginal man, First Nations man, and he's standing for himself. And he got so much abuse, he ended up punching this prison officer in the face. That's a hard thing, you know, because you know that they have the guns and they have the sticks and things. Whoa. So anyway, the other prison officers bounced on him, and he fought and hit another in the melee, hit another three, and so they eventually dragged him down. and took him then and into another area where they beat him up badly, and took him then into the what's called the HRMCC, the High Risk Management Correctional Centre, inside the jail. A very, very tight area there where he was held there, and he's been held there ever since. Totally incommunicado, hasn't had a contact with any of his family, no one at all. He's absolutely been, he's been really, really treated badly. But then the prison officers, he then was taken to the court, and the court decided that yesterday he'd had a fight, and the prison officers, she did punch him, but then the magistrate didn't extend his sentence and only gave him a community sentence instead. This really outraged the prison officers, who went on strike for 2 days. And to the extent that it caused so much consternation that the Premier himself and also the Attorney General got it all
in New South Wales?
Yeah, New South Wales. Mm-hmm. So it was actually quite a serious interaction. It wasn't a light one. And in the end, so they went back to work in inverted commas, back into the prisons, and the courts continued. It came before the Newcastle court just recently. Now, we had expected that all the evidence for him would have been brought in because he was beaten up so badly and that he was provoked as well. But then it didn't come before the courts, and we're really annoyed about it. And we think it's disgraceful, the fact that he was beaten up and no evidence was given on his behalf. And the fact that all these prison officers have been involved in provoking him, and then that information was not able to be brought before the court, is just really wrong. So what we said was, well, this is not the way for prison officers to stand over the courts. The prison officers should have accepted the decision of the courts because they are actually public servants. They're not above the law. They have to accept what the court has brought down, and they can't go on strike and force the Attorney General to bring it back before the courts or have the parole board do back demands parole. So we made some pretty strong statements about that, and we're hanging very close to Cameron, and his family is very well. They're as you can imagine, outraged. And we're close to Cameron. We're going to bring it back before the courts if we can.
To interrupt, but what time frame has this been happening?
Well, it's happened over the last only just maybe 6 weeks, the last 6 weeks.
Okay.
So it was quite a few. It happened at the end of October, early November. And so the last 5-6 weeks has been sitting waiting, and then last Friday we heard for the first time it can be for the courts in a hurry. We had lawyers there, but the lawyers weren't able to get a proper contact with Cameron, and so we're still in the process of working out what's going on in the next stage. But we think it's really important to stay with people like him, especially when the prison officers are taking a hard line. They go out and strike and try to dominate the courts. They can't do that, and they should be definitely blocked from that.
Look, and so what has the family asked that be done?
Well, look, first of all, the family's concerned that he's not isolated. You know, they've reached into him, and he is so depressed now.
He was
smashed. He was smashed. And he was also put down so badly and provocatively. You know, they used language directed towards him, which was, you know, you're compelled to fight. You know, you couldn't allow those things to be said about you. And so the prison officers know that too.
What prison was that?
It happened originally in it's called Macquarie, I'm sorry.
So it's happened in a number of prisons.
It's the Hunter. It was the Hunter Correctional Centre up towards Cessnock in New South Wales.
Terrible.
So that's
there's just so many instances, isn't there, of not only deaths in custody, which is graphically horrible, but also disgraceful conduct and racial profiling of First Nations people in prison.
Yes, and total domination too. So there's a real contempt for the prisoner. You know, we've got to make sure those voices come out and come out strongly. And if we can start properly using those computer tablets, then people can get the expressions out and get it out easily. So a man called John Dowd, who's the former state attorney general, and I went through the ACT prison in 2017. Every week, passing through that prison, 22,000 emails were moving in and out of that prison every week. 22,000. out of a small jail, a jail with only 460 prisoners that they have now. Now, that sort of communication is the communication that should be able to be supported in every jurisdiction, every prison. Everyone should have access to the internet.
That's
and should
right.
be able to talk safely to their family, and that there's no reason at all why that should not occur now, and people should have access to telecommunications as of right.
Brett, thank you so much for coming onto the program, and also for any listeners, correct me if I'm wrong here, go on to the Justice Action website and have a look at that media release in regards to Cameron Welsh, isn't it?
Yes, good. It's up there, and the submissions for the Senate inquiry, if they can get them in, even if it's only something, some short statement, I think it would be a useful thing.
Absolutely.
Shall we give the address again?
On next year. Update you. I can't believe how this year has flown.
I know, running past. Okay.
Well, we wanted to have you back before the summer break.
So there's always heaps happening. We're always fully engaged, so we're not going to be slowing down. Be sure of that. That's good. It's a privilege to be having the opportunity to speak on your program. Thank you.
Lovely. Oh, thank you so much, Brett. And you've always been a friend of mine, a friend of the Do and Time show.
Good, excellent. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Z the People from 47 Soul. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, Free Palestine.
G'day, Ralph Edwards here from the Concrete Gang, creatures of the industry, and a long-time supporter of 3CR. Next year, the Concrete Gang and 3CR are both going to be 50. 1976, and one of the first shows on 3CR was the Concrete Gang. We're looking for anyone who has some cassette recordings of a Concrete Gang show, anything from 1976 through to 2000 when everything became digitized. We're looking for that material. Whatever you've got, we're interested in getting them digitized and become part of an archive, which is the Concrete Gang 50th Anniversary Archive. Ring 3CR on 9419 8377 during business hours, or come in to 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, and help us put together the best possible archive we can have of the Concrete Gang. Dare to look, struggle to find, and help us out with the 50th Anniversary Archive of the Concrete Gang. Thank you.
And break a couple of concrete pours to back our log of flame. And in case people have just tuned in, this is the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. Next up, we've got David Glantz from the Refugee Action Collective. What I'm doing today is really just inviting a few guests onto the show to actually just give some updates about some of the campaigns that they're doing. Apologies to listeners that we were unable to bring you an interview with Maggie Mon, who is from the Human Rights Law Centre, hoping to have them on next week. But in the meantime, I'd like to welcome David to the program. Hello.
Hi, Marissa. Thanks.
Lovely to have you. Now, David, last week we spoke with Thomas from the Refugee Action Collective, and he gave an excellent eyewitness account of the rally and talked a lot about some of the contexts of, you know, what's been happening with Australia First rallies. But I wanted to invite you onto the show just to do a little bit of follow-up discussion about that, and also just to talk about, some of the updates or things that are happening with refugees and asylum seekers.
Absolutely. Where would you like to start?
Sorry?
Where would you like to start?
You begin.
Okay. The next...
Can you speak up a little bit, Dave? Have you got your headphones on or something?
No. Hold on.
That's better.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you, David.
Sorry, apologies.
Awesome.
It's actually, it was hearing aids, but there you go.
Oh, are you okay? Do you need help?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Cool.
All right. The next likely far-right mobilisation is going to be, and this is disgraceful and it's a provocation, is going to be Australia Day, and March for Australia, who organised the largest racist rallies back in August, have said that they will mobilise, and the Nazis of the National Socialist Network have said that they will support those rallies. So,
on Invasion Day?
On Invasion Day, yes.
Which is what date?
26th of January.
Oh.
So, six, seven weeks away now.
Yeah.
So, we are on notice that there will be a far-right mobilisation. And I think there will be quite some discussion amongst anti-racists about how to respond. I think my personal feeling is the best way to respond to March for Australia on that day is not to take the bait and to chase around the streets of Melbourne trying to find their rally. I think the best response is to build an even more massive Invasion Day rally, and our Indigenous brothers and sisters who call that rally each year get tremendous support. I would say it's at least 30,000 people each year mobilised in the city, and I think the best response to March for Australia would be to try and turn that into an even bigger turnout for Indigenous rights, land rights, and all the other demands raised by our Indigenous brothers and sisters. There'll be some debate, I suspect, amongst anti-racists about whether that's the best way to go. But I think we have an opportunity to massively outnumber the far right and demonstrate to them that what they call Australia Day is actually Invasion Day, and that people standing within in solidarity with the Indigenous struggle massively outnumber them. So that's something for the end of next month. And people should keep an eye out on social media for notification of when that Invasion Day rally is called.
Absolutely. I mean, that I'm not surprised to hear that announcement, David. And in fact, compounded with that, the Melbourne CBD now has, you'd be aware of this, has a designated area, and it's been challenged in federal court, and indeed Tynine, Onus Brown and Benny, represented by the Human Rights Law Centre, have filed a legal and constitutional challenge in the federal court against the Victorian's Assistant Police Commissioner's decision to declare the entire Melbourne CBD and surrounds as a designated area for 6 months. And basically, there's a big worry about Invasion Day and what's going to happen about with that too.
I can imagine people would be concerned. I'm pleased to hear there's been a challenge. The idea that the police can simply declare an area for 6 months where they can stop people without justification, search them and pull them up over minor infringements is very, very worrying. And of course, there's nothing stopping them the moment the 6 months is up, declaring another 6 months. And this, unfortunately, has been part of the Jacinta Allen Labor government law and order agenda, which is to give the police more and more powers. Yet only tiny numbers of people searched at random ever have weapons. And I suspect some of those weapons are pretty small beer at all. So the civil liberties of people coming into the city, not just to protest, but to go shopping, to do anything, are at risk. And I say shopping, and people might go, why would that be a problem? Well, if you're a person of colour, particularly a young person of colour, we know you are disproportionately likely to be stopped and searched, whether you're a migrant, a refugee, or an Indigenous young person. You are highly likely to be stopped, much more likely than, for an old white man like me. And so I wish that challenge all the best. But I think the best response on Invasion Day is to, instead of having 30,000 people on the streets, let's have 50,000 people on the streets.
Yeah.
There is enormous safety in numbers, and it sends a message that Melbourne is a town where we stand up against racism, whether that's anti-Aboriginal racism or whether it's March for Australia. And let's not forget, the last time the Nazis were in town, they attacked camp sovereignty. So for them, racism against migrants and racism against Indigenous people is absolutely the same thing. And that's why I think a really big turnout on Invasion Day is the best possible message.
Yeah, because, I mean, there'll be valuable resources wasted trying to find that rally, and the police will just create a big barrier to stop people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the rally, a week and a half ago now, a little over a week ago, the eyewitness reports were there were up to 1,000 police in the city, forming an absolutely unbreakable barrier between the anti-racists and the racists. So I think anybody who chases around on Invasion Day hoping to get close enough to the racist rally to, you know, yell in their ear, I don't think that's the most useful thing we could be doing. I think we need massive numbers. We want the message to be that tens and tens and tens of thousands of people in Melbourne stand in solidarity with Indigenous rights, and therefore we also stand against March for Australia and, of course, against the Nazis.
So the National Socialist Action Network, I think they're called, they're involved?
The NSN, yeah, it's Network. They've announced that they will support those rallies. Whereas some of the previous racist rallies over the last couple of months, they haven't supported them because the rallies haven't been racist enough, because they haven't been pure enough white. There's been people of colour and even Jews on the platform, and the NSN, of course, is not going to have a bar of that. So they're looking forward to a white rally on Australia Day, what they call Australia Day, and we need to outnumber them and utterly demoralise them.
I'm hoping that there's going to be lots of workshopping and planning, in the lead up to this, to combat all this.
Yep, I'm sure there will be, and the Refugee Action Collective has supported all the anti-racist rallies from August all the way through, and we called our own anti-racism rally in September, which was well attended on the day before the grand final, and we will very happily work with all the other organisations, Indigenous and ethnic and other groups, to make sure that we absolutely dominate the streets on Invasion Day.
Absolutely, and I'm really glad that you brought this up to listeners, David, because people need to be aware. Now, just on another note here, are you aware of the visit to Australia of the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention from the 1st to the 12th of December?
Yes, I am aware that there is a group from the United Nations coming to Australia to look at the practice of the government. I don't think it'll be very difficult for them if they've come with an open mind to see that the practice is absolutely rotten. So probably the worst of the situation for refugees and asylum seekers is represented by the situation with Nauru. And Nauru is a tiny island in the South Pacific. It's smaller than Tullamarine Airport. And there are about 100 asylum seekers on Nauru, but there are also now the first few people being deported from Australia to Nauru as part of Labor's deportation scheme. And they're in a terrible situation. So the asylum seekers on Nauru are given a couple of $100 a week, I think, to survive. And you think, well, that's not too bad, you know, as long as you shop wisely. But there was an article in The Guardian the other day pointing out that everything is in all food is enormous and clean water, enormously expensive on Nauru. A box of cereal, $15. A bag of grapes, $20. So if you're given $200 for a week, just surviving becomes very, very difficult. And people who asylum seekers on Nauru who have been dumped there by the Australian government don't have the right to work. And so they're living on an extremely hot island with very little access to food and water, let alone and not necessarily even air conditioning. And this is a total indictment of the Australian government. And I hope that the UN visiting group sees this, reports on it, and shines a spotlight on it. And as I say, there's the first five or so deportees have been sent to Nauru. This is a separate program. These are people who the Australian government is deporting. They're being deported to Nauru at enormous cost. The scheme is going to cost $2.5 billion over 30 years for about 350 people. These are people who could be in Australia at much lower cost. These are people who in some cases have done prison time, but if you've done prison time, you've done your time. You've done the crime, you've done your time, you should be allowed to go back into the community. But rather than facilitating that, the Labor government has come up with this scheme which feeds corruption in Nauru. It's been exposed on 60 Minutes, that there's enormous corruption, that a bikie gang was involved in getting its snout in the trough, that the president of Nauru is almost certainly taking backhanders. So we've got this huge honeypot of corruption and human misery being paid for by you and me through our taxes, and which is designed to treat people like they're in hell. So I hope that this will be spotlighted by the UN group. And then there are other problems, obviously, elsewhere. There's still about 30 refugees in Papua New Guinea, dumped there by the Australian government, some of them suffering terrible mental illness to the point where they can't really advocate for their own interests. And then here in this country, we have to say it looks like we have some very good news, but there's also some very bad news about people who came here by boat in the 2000s. And there have been there's been a very quiet, unannounced, uncelebrated shift of policy by the Labor government where people who came here by boat before 2014 are being offered permanent visas. And this is an enormous relief. A lot of these people came here and were rejected by what was called the fast track system, which was a system set up by the Liberal government to reject asylum seekers, essentially. But they're still living here 11, 12, 13 years later, have set up businesses here, have children here. The good news is that thousands of these people are now getting permanent visas. And that is a credit to the campaigning by refugees themselves and by the refugee movement. But then there are people who are in an almost identical situation who will not be getting an offer of visas. So listeners might be familiar with what were called the Medivac refugees, mm-hmm. people who were brought from Papua New Guinea and from Nauru for medical and psychological treatment. They were locked up in Melbourne in the Mantra Hotel in Preston.
Oh, that was during the COVID. I had a lot of interviews on that.
In Carlton. Yeah. Our campaigning and their resilience got them out. Even under a Liberal government, we managed to get them out and into the community. These people are contributing to society. Many of them have partners who are Australian citizens. They are being told they will still need to leave for a third country. And these are people who have been under the control of the Australian government, either offshore or in Australia or both for...
It's quite a haul, David.
13, 14 years of their lives.
Yeah.
And so we'll be continue to campaign for these people, and we'll hope that the United Nations spotlights their case as well.
I mean, basically, you know, this show has had a very long history of having not just lawyers on the show, but also, you know, people from First Nations people, campaigners such as yourself, so also allies and activists as well. So, and looking at what's going on, what the updates are. So I'm really happy that you were able to come onto the show. David, I also wanted to ask you to comment perhaps on this, the working group's visit. It's an opportunity, isn't it, to hold governments accountable to international human rights standards, isn't it? But I don't think that's going to happen, is it?
Well, they've been criticised before by the United Nations and bodies. But look, it's better that they're criticised than not criticised. But I do think it will be the campaign here on the ground in Australia. RAC is part of that campaign, but also our friends in the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, Refugee Legal, and so many other people are campaigning. So I do want to, if I've just got a moment, highlight two events that RAC is holding before we put our feet up for a couple of weeks and recharge the batteries. This Wednesday, so 2 days' time, is International Human Rights Day. And you mentioned human rights. It's International Human Rights Day. Refugee Action Collective will be holding a speak out for refugees and against racist deportations. That will be on the corner of Bourke Street and Swanston Street in the city from 5:30 on Wednesday. And people are welcome to come past for 10 minutes, 30 minutes to join us. People are welcome to come along and speak out about their personal experience as a refugee or a refugee supporter. And we'll be campaigning in the city to highlight the injustices that continue. So that's this Wednesday, corner of Bourke and Swanston at 5:30. And then we're finishing off the year 1 week from today with a forum entitled Refugees from Myanmar Tell Their Story. So Myanmar, in case people haven't kept up, is what used to be called Burma. And we will be showing a short new documentary, Voices of Resistance, about the military coup in Myanmar and why people fled. I think it's only about 20, 25 minutes. It's a short documentary. And then we have two refugees from Myanmar who will be speaking. Ko Salzman, who is the campaign manager with the Myanmar Campaign Network, and a woman, and I do apologise, I haven't had the chance to check how to say her name with her, but Anna Janes Simwai, who is a refugee from Myanmar living in Melbourne. So they'll both be speaking. So that's next Monday night, Monday the 15th, 6:30 at the Kathleen Syme Library in Carlton. If people check RACVIC on Facebook, you can find the event with all the details and a link for Zoom if you can't join us in person. But we'd encourage people to come along, and we'll keep campaigning for refugees right up to Christmas, and we'll start again promptly in the new year, because the fight for justice might take a very short breather, but it doesn't finish.
But technically speaking, the fight for justice is really 24 hours 7, really.
It is, but you are allowed to sleep at night occasionally, but No, campaigns week in, week out. We're not a we're a volunteer organisation, but we're not a part-time organisation. We meet weekly. We hold street stalls every week. But I confess we will be taking a break of about 3 weeks Christmas and New Year, so that we come back with more energy and more determination to work with refugees and their supporters for justice in 2026.
David, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It's been lovely to have you. And in fact, I've seen you on several occasions at protests where I've been recording. And it's always lovely to see you.
And great to see you too, Marissa. And I hope that you have a good break and come back, and this show kicks even more goals in the new year.
Oh, it will. It will. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot, David. Take care.
Okay, all the best.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
And you're listening to the Do and Time Show, 3CR Community Radio. And we're nearing the end of our show. You just heard two interviews with two wonderful campaigners, Brett Collins and David Glantz. And we had a great time talking quite a lot about many, many issues. So stay tuned for the Do and Time show every Monday from 4 to 5. And it's goodbye from Marissa. And we'll be going out with our theme song presently, Black Fella, White Fella by the Rumpy Band. And hopefully next week we will bring you some interviews from the Human Rights Law Centre. They were unable to make it today and were quite regretful. But in the meantime, stay safe and hit the streets. Bye.
Black fella, white fella, it doesn't matter what your color, as long as you a true fella, as long as you a real fella. Of different races, with different lives, in different places. It doesn't matter what your name is, we got to have lots of changes. We need more brothers, if we're to make it. We need more sisters, if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we shout?
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.